Hello, and welcome to the Logistics Management Podcast Series. My name is Jeff Berman. I'm Group News Editor for Logistics Management Magazine and the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group. Today, it's a real pleasure for us to welcome Rob Handfield to our podcast. Rob is a professor at North Carolina State's Poole College of Management and is the Bank of America Distinguished Professor of Supply Chain Management there. Rob also serves as Executive Director of the Supply Chain Resource Cooperative, which addresses thought leadership and research in the area of supply chain management within the Poole College of Management at NC State. And he also is a member of INFORMS, an international society for practitioners in the fields of operations research, management science, and analytics. Hey, Rob, welcome to our podcast today.
Thanks, Jeff. It's great to be here today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for joining us. Rob, I know we talked a few weeks ago when things were sort of hot and heavy in terms of the Ever Given vessel running aground in the Suez Canal. And, you know, obviously there was a lot of supply chain disruption related to that. So, you know, I just thought as a starting point, you know, given what happened in the canal, it really does continue to highlight the red flags that supply chains face, whether it's the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, what happened in the Suez, the harsh winter weather we dealt with in February, what's happening with fuel prices, although they've leveled out a bit, a new president. You know, there's a lot of different things going on. So with all that as a backdrop of sorts, Rob, what can and should shippers specifically be doing in order to respond in the right ways to unforeseen circumstances? And for unforeseen circumstances, I'm really speaking directly to the Suez development a few weeks back there.
Well, you know, it's definitely a difficult time for shippers, as you said, Jeff. And, you know, the Suez Canal crisis was definitely problematic. There were a lot of ships that were backed up. You know, even shutting it down for a week, you would have literally hundreds of ships that were stuck, unable to get through there with cargo. And so there is a backlog on a lot of those shipments still that are late coming in. We're also seeing shortages and price increases go up as well on a number of different things. A lot of wood products right now we're starting to see shortages on, and definitely price increases are going up. And I think part of it is people have sort of held off on being on these kinds of price increases during COVID. They're now seeing, you know, that there is some inflation in some of these, and shipping costs themselves have just really gone through the roof. So, you know, the cost of a container now has gone up significantly. Mm-hmm. And then there are these other disruptions, as we said, going on. There's also, I think, a lack of capacity in some cases to keep up with some of the activity that's going on. Good example of this is semiconductors. Big shortage right now in semiconductors. Lead times are out for a year. So for shippers, you know, I think a lot of them are being asked to expedite freight. They're being asked to get things as quickly as possible. But they're also running into, you know, border control issues. They're showing up at the dock and things aren't ready to go. They're behind schedule. So there's a lot of delays overall occurring throughout the supply chain.
Okay, absolutely. No question about it. And, you know, so for example, with the Ever Given, you know, it was dislodged in the Suez for roughly a week. You know, it got me thinking about, well, there's a ton of inventory, obviously, on that vessel, and still is, I believe. You know, when something like that happens, Rob, how does that approach to inventory management for shippers that were impacted, how does that change and shift things and get them thinking about repositioning assets, for example?
Well, you know, as we talked about, one of the problems with shipping cargo right now is the shipping companies have always sort of gone for the lowest cost solution. So they've built bigger and bigger ships. They're slow steaming them to reduce the amount of fuel that they use. They're making multiple stops along the way. And this is really slowing down inventory that's on the water. When you get a delay like the Suez delay or port delays, it slows it down even further. So for companies, this is not a good thing because you're actually paying for material, for inventory that's sitting on a container in a ship somewhere. And there really isn't a good way to be able to expedite that. Even if you did want to expedite, a container that was on a ship, it's not like you can send a helicopter over there and pick it up because it's, you know, stacked on top of many other containers. So it's actually moving in the wrong direction. And we're seeing organizations now that are recognizing that lead time and working capital is becoming an important component of financial performance. And by working capital, we mean reducing the amount of inventory that you have either, you know, being transported or at a shipping dock or at a in a warehouse, and focusing on speed, on inventory velocity. And that's a shift that I think we're starting to see. And that's also being heightened by, you know, some of the export controls that are causing further delays. And people are starting to say, you know, maybe we ought to be shipping things closer to home and maybe developing supply chains that are shorter as opposed to longer and spread out all over the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's actually a good segue, Rob, because I remember the last time we talked, you talked about an upcoming book you have coming out, right, called Flow, which sort of has that sort of domestic supply chain as a core front and center theme. Is that right?
Absolutely right. And the idea behind Flow is we're sort of modeling after physical flows. And if you look at how rivers or other things flow, they take the path of least resistance. You know, they avoid friction. And if you think about it, things that are closer to you, if you have suppliers that are closer to your customers, where you sell where you buy and buy where you sell, mm-hmm. you know, you're able to get less lead time. You're able to get things more quickly. You're able to get your working capital more quickly. If there's a problem, you can have a face-to-face meeting without having to travel across the world. You can have phone calls in the same time zone, in the same language. Gosh, there's a lot of benefits to having supply chains that are closer to home. And one of the things we explored in the book is that there's obviously a cost if we look at trying to bring suppliers back to the U.S. However, there's another country just south of us, you know, where they do have lower labor costs and a very productive workforce. There's a country to the north of us that has a surplus of, natural goods and natural products, and the U.S. has a surplus of capital investment. So I think that there's an awfully good argument to be made that creating a North American supply chain platform may very well be in the future for us.
Yeah, that would be really interesting. One thing that's also really kind of top of mind, as someone that follows a lot of supply chain logistics and freight transportation related developments on a daily basis, going back to the outset of the pandemic, you know, the situation with the Suez, the harsh winter weather, these are all things that at one point or another have impacted carriers' ability to move shippers' goods. And I guess in a sense, it puts supply chain on a global level in the spotlight, not always in a positive way, but at the same time, it also raises the profile of supply chain to people that may not necessarily think about it much. And sort of with that backdrop, it seems like supply chain, Rob, is really getting a more prominent seat at the table, in places like the corporate boardrooms across the country. And in Washington, D.C., just based on the recent supply chain executive order issued by the White House. I'm just wondering how you kind of feel about sort of that trend or theme as it's sort of developing by the day.
No, there's definitely, supply chain as being a hot issue, not necessarily for the right reasons. But and I've heard a lot of people say, gosh, you know, we're finally getting the recognition that we believe is due. We've worked in this industry for so long, and people just assume that these supply chains existed and there wasn't any problem with them. Right. All of a sudden, the government, as you point out, has started to really, enact legislation. They have a hearing that I've been asked to speak on relative to a senatorial hearing relative to, what went wrong during the pandemic. How do we address some of the shortfalls that occurred in terms of medical supplies and masks and ventilators and rubber gloves that, you know, really threatened a lot of our healthcare providers. And more importantly, what do we do about it? How do we, you know, create supply chains that are more robust and are able to withstand, you know, these kinds of disruptive events that occur? And the answer, you know, that I think is going to be important to recognize is there's no single solution here. We really need to look at a portfolio of items, just like we do in purchasing, where you do category management. Mm-hmm. You got to look at each category of goods and services. You know, look at the market characteristics, look at the product itself, look at the cost, look at the logistics and landed costs of getting it from overseas, and ask the question, does it really make sense, you know, to bring this stuff back to the United States, or are there other ways of managing it through distributed inventory, partnerships with suppliers overseas? How do we want to work through these kinds of problems? And I think that's something that the government doesn't always understand. They're always sort of, you know, rah-rah USA, bring it all back here. It doesn't work that way, because in the end, if the cost goes up, you know, our healthcare providers like Medicare and CMS, they're not going to pay extra for rubber gloves, you know, over what they can get in Asia, for instance.
Sure, sure, absolutely. And just out of curiosity, Rob, you said you're going to be speaking in D.C. Is that a Senate hearing, a House hearing? I was just curious, you know, what it was and what the committee was.
Tentatively, it looks like a Senate hearing. And again, the concern is there, you know, what happened during COVID in terms of the strategic national stockpile? Okay. And how should that stockpile be planned? And we had an article that we published in the Milbank Quarterly that came up with what we thought were the characteristics of, you know, what we call SNS 2.0, which is the next national stockpile, which, you know, I don't think it should be a stockpile at all. I think it should be something that we actually come up with, again, a sourcing strategy for each type of item that's out there.
Okay. Great. And obviously a lot of this stuff goes back to risk management, and just sort of curious about how shippers can hedge themselves when it comes to risk management planning, along the lines of the things they need to be paying the most attention to in times of need and crisis.
So risk management, it comes down to advanced planning for some extent. You can't plan for every possible threat that's going to come along, but what you can do is you can come up with what's called a playbook. And, you know, this is what the Marines have. When they're under fire in the battlefield, they've got a plan. They've got a communications plan. They've got a, an intelligence plan. They know how to react. So I think that's one of the first things is let's put together an emergency response plan and how we pull people together, how we can able to quickly assess the information of what's going on, pull in the right people to look at that information, make a decision, and move quickly. Because I think that's the biggest thing is if you sit around and wait too long, you know, you get a little problem and it all of a sudden becomes a really, really big problem if you let it sit and fester for too long. And so I think a playbook is important. And secondly, I think you need to have some kind of risk analysis system platform, whether it's Resilinc or some others, where you're monitoring what's going on in the world around you. Mm-hmm. and translating that into early action. You know, and that's something that, you know, the U.S., we knew early on that there was going to be a problem back in January. What happened was we waited too long to react. You know, they didn't react until late March. Yep. And by then it was too late. You know, all the PPE was gone. You know, people were already sold out of ventilators. You know, it was a bit of a disaster. So those are the kinds of things I think we can start to plan ahead with a playbook and get good intel on what's happening in the marketplace.
Okay. Great. And how about the aspect of cybersecurity risk management as it relates to the supply chain? I know that that's something that's come up in recent years. I know FedEx had a big issue with it, and I believe Ryder did as well, not all that long ago. What are some of the, I guess, expert or things that shippers or carriers should really be on the lookout for in terms of dealing with that sort of thing?
Well, you know, the issue, you know, a lot of the cyber security issues come because of, you know, people who get hacked or people who allow others into the system through, you know, scam emails or Trojan horses, as they call them.
Sure.
That's a huge problem. We're really sort of in a nascent stage in terms of how we deal with those kinds of issues. You know, I would argue that people need to spend more time, you know, thinking about different cybersecurity issues, not just for their own organization, but for their key partners, their suppliers, and their shippers, shipping partners. We're launching a study on that this year, because honestly, I think that's where the problem is. You know, it can happen with, you know, some of these smaller suppliers. You know, they let somebody in and then they can make their way through the network. If they're connected to a buying company, they can make their way through that network and access the larger company. So those are the challenges I think that will continue to continue to face.
Okay, great. And just wrapping up here, Rob, you know, if you were to sort of identify quickly two or three things, for example, that shippers really need to be focusing on, especially as hopefully we're emerging out of the pandemic and looking ahead. You know, the economy's going pretty well. People are out spending money. The more that's happening, the more supply chains on many fronts will be active. What are some of the key things for shippers to really be focusing on, say, over the next couple of years?
Well, you know, I think this is my personal opinion. I don't think we're going to see COVID suddenly disappear. So I think we're going to continue to see, you know, the after effects of COVID. Maybe not so much in the U.S. And North America, but I think we're going to continue to see it, especially in countries overseas, in Asia, in Africa and South America. So I think there's going to be continued risks of variants. And I know that's not what people want to hear right now, but you know, my assessment is that this thing could go on for several more years. So, you know, make sure you're vaccinated, we're going to have booster shots, make sure your people have the boosters, mm-hmm. You know, and stay healthy. And we're going to continue to have to take precautions. Unfortunately, I think, you know, this COVID thing is not going to go away quickly. So it's not going to be a situation of get back to normal. I think we've got to be alert and aware of what's going on and keep up with, you know, the right medical measures going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, listen, Rob, we're at the end of our time for today. On behalf of Logistics Management Magazine and the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group, I'd like to offer up a big thank you for joining us today.
No, it's my pleasure, Jeff. These are great questions and great insights. So,
yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And again, just want to remind everyone about Rob's book, Flow, which I believe your co-author was Tom Linton. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, it should be coming out later this year.
Okay, awesome. That's great to hear. And everyone out there, please don't hesitate to give us a follow on Twitter at LogisticsMGMT and to subscribe to our podcast. It's simply over at it's Supply Chain 24/7, wherever you get your podcast. So, thanks, everybody, and have a great day.